Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Maxwell Nee, a dynamic leader in the family office and investment space based in Singapore. Maxwell is the founder of Family Office Insider, a private community connecting ultra-high net worth individuals with exclusive co-investment opportunities, strategic introductions, and unparalleled resources. A seasoned entrepreneur and former finance professional, Maxwell managed 100 plus million dollar portfolios at Commonwealth Bank of Australia before founding multi-award winning ventures featured in Forbes and Wealth Insider. He's a global advocate for alternative investments, sharing expertise at prestigious forums like the Business Times and Prestel and Partner. One of his projects I'm interested in is ScoreApp, where he operates as the chief revenue officer. ScoreApp is an AI-enabled quiz marketing platform to attract warm leads, gain powerful insights, and increase sales. I've asked Maxwell to join us here today to share his insights into successful investing and business growth. So Maxwell, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
Really, really good. Thank you for having me, Daryl.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, before we hop into some of the nuts and bolts of what you've got going on and that, how did you even get started in this? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Are you just the next in the long line of generation of business owners and entrepreneurs and investors, or?
Yeah, good question. So yes, my parents happened to have their own business. I think my grandfather did as well, but that's not, you know, I wouldn't say I was handed down an entrepreneurial gene. What happened was I worked in corporate banking, you know, had a pretty good career, and then all of a sudden just really found it painful to go to work. So I would say I became an entrepreneur out of necessity to not hate going to work anymore.
That's, I think there's a lot of people that can resonate with that. So what did you do? I mean, okay, so you've got a good career, you're in corporate banking, it's a beast of its own. You want to go do your own thing. You just hung out a shingle and the skies parted and the angels came down and it was all sunshine and rainbows, or what?
I was totally burnt out. So, you know, when you're burnt out, you're like, wow, I should have planned this better. So I just literally quit and then moved overseas because I needed just time to reset and work out what I wanted to do. I did try a few other jobs because I wasn't, you know, I was still getting over that fear of, you know, sort of being 100% on my own. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't work out, because I was just thinking, wow, I'm still unhappy. It's like, okay, well, I've got no choice now. So I sort of backed myself into a corner where the only option was to go all in on supporting myself by being an entrepreneur.
Got it. So you burn the boats.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then that was it. That was just all you needed, and unlocked the magic code and the pearly gates opened.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, like, the boats burnt. I didn't realize how unhappy I was working for someone else until one day it just all crept up. You know, it all creeps up on you and you're like, wow, I really can't be here anymore. Mm-hmm. Really not happy. Putting on this jacket and this tie and, you know, that I had to wear every single day.
Yes.
Right? You know what I mean?
In Tokyo. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And then, you know, then I tried working for a startup. So I thought, okay, look, I'll work for a startup. You know, it was in like this startup hub that people were walking around like barefoot, and there was like fake grass there and free food and bean bags and free coffee. And then I thought, okay, well, this will make me happy. But then it didn't, you know. So what really makes me happy is just doing what I want to do, not, you know, pretending that I'm into something when I'm not, and just sucking that up for 8 hours a day, right? So that was a huge, like, black and white, you know. It was a bit like, you gotta face the music now. And, you know, saw it really clearly. Okay, I've really just got to, you know, actually jump both feet in to, you know, supporting myself.
I actually pulled it up just now because I always keep this nearby. I actually look at this maybe, I don't know if every quarter, but definitely a couple times a year. And it's a short list that says top regrets of the dying. And after years in palliative care, nurse Bronnie Ware put together this shortened list. So this nurse, palliative care is where, for those that don't know, they're listening, it's where they take you when they're just waiting for, you know, death to kind of knock on your door. And so this nurse that worked there for most of her career, she put together a list of the biggest regrets people had on their deathbed. And there's five of them. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends, and I wish that I had let myself be happier. It's a little list, and I always look at it, and if I feel like any of them hit too hard, then I know what I need to work on. So I think that's a really powerful. I think your story, a lot of people can empathize with it. A lot of people maybe don't feel like they can do something, that they have to do that because of pressures, whether it's family or other. Do you have any recommendations for anyone that's starting out and maybe struggling on their entrepreneurial journey?
Because it was unplanned for me, I didn't really have, 12 months worth of savings like how most people do or plan to have and that type of thing. So it was like pedal to the metal. I had 45 days worth of savings, so I had to really, really work some stuff out quickly, and did a few odd jobs here and there, and just, a bit like threw myself into the deep end. But what I would say is, when you're an entrepreneur, all you're looking for is time. Like every dollar equals having more time back. So I always say now that if you don't have any time, then you just can't be an entrepreneur. So like it's extremely high risk, but if I was thrown back in there again and I could, I would go to the bank and take out a loan to just buy myself a year, and then really focus on a venture that I put a lot of thought into that I could do really well, and just execute that, with a really level head, and focus on turning that time into dollars. So it's about getting money in first, whichever way possible. Could be a loan, could be selling a car, could be selling a house or whatever, to then buy you time to then double down back on making more money to then buy you more time.
I like that. Jim Rohn's got some sort of quote where he says most people are working full time on their job and not even, I forget how I'm gonna butcher this, but it's like most people work full time on their job and part time on their fortune, but you should be working full time on your job and part time, or sorry, full time on your fortune, part time on your job. Because no one's really getting rich working a job. Like you can save a decent amount of money, you might be able to squeak out a decent retirement, but where the wealth is really created is through building a business, providing something to people that they want and need at scale, and investing your money wisely that's made the surplus from that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you got to do what we got to do. So, in my first few years, I made a quarter. Like compared to my full-time salary, I made 25% of that, if that, in the first sort of 1, 2 years. And that came from, I just had friends that had random businesses and needed a bit of help here and there. And I just, did that just to get by, and was a bit like a human for hire. Like one of them needed a guy to help plan some events. So I did running around at events, carried tables around and that type of thing. And then I also worked part time at Lululemon to just, coast that over. Also because, I love Lululemon, so
Right, yeah.
it was what,
I just see the girls try on the yoga pants. I just
yeah, like what, yeah, it wasn't a hard time, right? It wasn't a hard time sitting around there and also getting that staff discount. Like that was pretty amazing. So, it and so I was working part time in a lot of businesses so that I could, yeah, do exactly that, work full time on my dream. So I've done that, literally done that.
So what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced that you had and you had to overcome? I mean, you kind of danced around a little bit, but what were some of the biggest obstacles? It sounded like first you needed to make enough money to have time. This is a I well, I'll just put ask that question.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people, myself included, have to jump over that fear of rejection really, really quickly. Not everyone gets put into a situation where they have to master that, but you'll find that pretty much every successful entrepreneur has mastered that. And sometimes they've mastered it by accident, as they were growing up, type of thing. And I'll give you an example. She's a content creator, and she has, tens of thousands, probably 100,000 now, local followers, because I was living in Europe at the time, of followers in and around Spain and Portugal. And, she made really, really good local content, and she had heaps of people engaging. Like the typical engagement rate on content back then was, 3, 4, 5, 6%, and hers was like 15%. So it's almost 3 times. So, and then, but she was, for some reason, she was only doing one brand associated posts like every every 6 months, like only 2 a year, like some ridiculously low number. And she was putting all the time into this content. And then I said to her, why, like, how many actual jobs have you created from all this content that you do? Like, how much actual money have you brought in? She's like, oh, you know, 1 or 2 a year. I said, why is that? Like, your engagement is killing it. Like, if I was a business owner and I saw what you had and you could bring this sort of awareness and attention and whatever to my business, you know, that could,
Huge.
I would pay for that. And then, like, let's say, you know, you're not comfortable to charge $5,000 or like what they charge in America, but maybe you charge 250, you know, $250 a day for doing the same work that you're already doing is good money, right? And she said, I don't deal with rejection well. And I was like, what? You know, so she the jobs that she did get, she never ever pitched for them. And because she just couldn't deal with rejection, she never ever pitched. So that forced her to become really, really good at making content because she just said, it's got to be so good that they have to come to me because I'm too scared to go to them. Right. So it's a bit like when you're blind, your hearing gets really good, right? Because it has to, because you're blind. So she, like, you know, was blind in that she couldn't ever ask for business. She had to always just be such a big, bright, shiny star that business had to come to her. So I think that, you know, that happens a lot. You know, a lot of people, you know, on the surface level, under the surface level, they're aware of it or they're not. They avoid, you know, some type of confrontation or rejection. Yeah.
I think that's important. That's a form of extroversion and willingness to accept criticism and feedback. Those two things are critically important. You don't have to be an extrovert, but essentially a business is never, I mean, even if you have phenomenal retention, you do amazing with whatever you do, you're in some sort of subscription business and you're phenomenal. You know, if you aren't bringing new blood into the business, the only thing you can do is lose customers. There's no growth, even if you have.
Exactly.
So you have to be extroverted in the sense you have to be willing to go out and meet people and go to new places and try new things. We also have to be willing to accept criticism and feedback because the market really doesn't care about you. Like you know, it's like an infomercial on TV where you just click a button and you got 5 seconds and it's gone, or a YouTube ad, you know, you got 5 seconds and it's gone. So that harshness, that harsh reality, I think I agree with you 100%. Being willing to accept and know that it's an iterative process. Naval says this. I don't know if you know who Naval is, but I really like some of his stuff. And he talks about it's not 10,000 hours, it's 10,000 iterations. That's 10,000 iterations to
Yeah.
where you want to go. And that means that you're going to fail along the way. You'll have lots of successes too, but I think that's a great tidbit. What are some other specific skills or behaviors that you think are important to improve and develop as an entrepreneur?
I think, look, it sounds super, super boring, like so boring, but it's literally just being scientific. And you'll find that all the big, really successful businesses, they're very, very scientific in how they do things. You know, they very rarely just take a chance something without at least some kind of data, right? So, perfect example, you know, when Elon Musk launched the Tesla Roadster 5 years ago now, of which no one has one yet, you know, he didn't go out and build, you know, 5 million of them and then try to sell them. He made one prototype that he thought he could get the costs about right. And then he, you know, made a video, threw it up on YouTube, and then started collecting orders and said, you'll get one sometime. You know, so he's got all this data on demand, and then he takes that data on the demand, then he goes to the bank and says, hey, look, I want a loan at 1% to fulfill these orders because this is as good as cash, right? So that whole process is a very scientific way to reduce his risk to like almost zero. That makes sense, you know, and
He
yeah.
did pre-sold $300 million worth of Teslas in $1,000 down payments.
Yeah, and no one has one yet, right? And we're sitting here like what, 5 years later. So, you know, like a lot of people get a bit, oh, you know, what if I launch something and then I can't deliver? Well, one of the most successful companies on the planet still hasn't delivered yet, right? And they've taken money from people. So like you just create a process to deal with that, but for him and for anyone, like that waiting list or that pre-registration list or whatever, is the most scientific way to launch a new product. And you could bet that if he just had crickets or had insults and no orders came in, the Tesla Roadster website would just evaporate, you know, and just forget about it, move on and go to the next car. So it's just about that, taking emotion out of it. You know, you're scientifically testing, just like how a scientist goes through, okay, is this the best formula? Test results. Okay, no. Change one ingredient. Is this the best formula? Right? That's how scientists come up with, you know, medicine, right? They go through one ingredient at a time and testing the formula, and how chefs come through, you know, improving how they bake a cake. It's the same thing. Like if you just follow that scientific step-by-step, really systematic process of changing the ingredients until you hit the right matrix of ingredients, then, you know, mathematically, you will find the winner.
Yeah, that sounds also very similar to me to the engineering process as it was described to me. It's a four-step process: brainstorm, research, prototype, final build. You know, that's essentially the process. And I think that's, you know, it goes back to what we said about 10,000 iterations. I think that's a great idea. A lot of people, my buddy and I actually, we used to say, as long as you have your roof and ramen covered, you're good. Like, you know, you gotta make sure you got roof and ramen. You got a
No, I
couple
love that.
of, yeah, you got the roof over your head, you got a couple of hot noodles, you're good. And you know, even if it's 7-Eleven hot water noodles, you know, you're good. And at that point, it's just try to make it a game. And almost like you said, test. I like that. I love that a lot.
Look,
So
I also think just on that, you know, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. You know,
right.
not everyone is built to love this game. You know, and I think a lot of it is you got to be really honest with yourself as well. You know, part of me being ready to totally let go of, you know, the 9 to 5 golden handcuffs of a really high paid job was that I also had a moment of just the clouds demystified enough for me to be really, really honest with myself. Okay, I am 200% sure now that this will never make me happy. You know, people live in denial, like, oh yeah, you know, if I get paid a little bit more, I'll be happier. If I switch the industry more, I'll be happier. If I reduce my work, if I don't work Friday, I'll be happier. And a lot of people chase that sort of fake illusion of like that little dopamine kick. Oh, you know, the 3% salary boosts, that'll make me happier. Or they go out and then they use that salary and then they buy a car and then they think the car's going to make them happier for the job that they don't like, or the house, or the holiday, or the you know, the whiskey bottle at home, right, will make them happier for the job that they don't like, you know. So it's like you've, I don't know, what's an analogy? It's like it's the very typical, you know, you're trying to heal the symptom constantly instead of the disease, right?
Alan Watts has a great talk on this called Music and Life. He talks about how a lot of people live their life by an analogy, like as if they have goals in life, and the purpose of life is to achieve those goals. So when you're in first grade, the goal is to get to second grade, and when you're in second grade, the goal is to get to third grade, and keep
Yeah.
going. You go to university, then you go to college, and then you go off and join the world, and then you're working at this company, and then the goal is to hit your quota, and then you gonna then I'm gonna get promoted, and you keep climbing and keep climbing. It's like, and then finally, when you're about 40 or so, you achieve everything you set, you get this bag, but you realize it was a false goal. You know, it's life's a musical thing. It's about the journey. You're supposed to sing and dance while the music is playing. That they said, you know, if the whole point of a musical composition was the final chord, people would go to a concert just to hear one crashing note, but it's not. It's about the journey. And so you have to love what you're doing. You know, to a certain extent, you have to learn some skills, and you have to learn what you don't like. It's not just about sunshine and rainbows and wooey woofoo wooness. You also find out what you hate. You have to be able to willing to sit down and go, I hate this. I hate that. I'm not a fan of this, you know? And I think that's
Yeah.
the journey
Yeah,
too.
you gotta be honest with yourself about the good and especially about the bad. Right? Yeah.
What are some of the habits day to day? Like, we've talked kind of high level stuff, like be scientific, overcome the fear of rejection, build a wait list, like some high level things. But in terms of like day to day or even weekly habits that you think have helped you most on your path to success in entrepreneurship and as a business owner, is it prospecting every day? Is it allocating time to get into deep work to focus? Like,
What habits?
Good question. I'm always cautious to share mine because, you know, everyone's different. Like, I don't think that just because I do mine, like, it's the answer to everyone. So I just wanted to let everyone know that you got to find what works for you. So I'm like a, you know, if I was like a body type or like an animal type, I'd be like a lion. So I like to get up early. I like to do all my hunting and action and stuff, you know, in the, like a very golden 3, 4 hours of the day, right? The first 3, 4 hours of the day. And then I like to basically sleep for the rest of the day. I don't mean I actually sleep, but I mean my brain is off because I've just taken down an elephant, right? So I like wake up, take out an elephant in the morning, then rest. And you know, some people are a bit more like a worker bee, where they like to do incremental, you know, tasks every hour. I'm a, you know, take a big harpoon to the big, you know, to take down the big monster, you know, first thing in the morning, and then, you know, just then use 10% of my ability for the rest of the day. So that's me personally. And what that looks like is, yeah, I make sure I do my hygiene, right? And I specifically use the word hygiene. So hygiene is like, you know, what do I need to do every day so that I'm an effective lion? My teeth are sharp every day. And that's, yeah, I would get up and go to the gym, you know, make sure I have time to just sit with my notebook. And, you know, like people think my wife is a bit more like a worker bee. And when she sees me sitting in my notebook, she's like, "You don't do anything." I said, "No, this is hunting. You know, part of hunting is planning. You
That's
know,
right.
it's not just running around with a spear, you know, just cr like a maniac
Yelling at
because
the bushes.
because you think that you're doing something. It's aiming, you know, it's planning and it's aiming and it's picking a target. So that in itself and just for me, because I never used to be like that. You know, I used to think, oh, you know, I have to be a worker bee. Like you have to be, if you're not busy, you're not doing work. But then I learned the definition between like busy work and work. You know, busy work is, yeah, I'm responding to all my emails, but if 90% of them are crap, why are you getting them in the first place? Like, what have you done to bring these distractions into your, you know, into your vicinity in the first place? So, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what type of books do I read or that type of thing? And they're like, oh, I listen to two podcasts a day or whatever. I'm like, yeah, but how much of that do you apply? You know, so I'm a very, very selective, like I might listen to maybe 10 books a year or, you know, read 10 books a year or not even that, or even like five. But I could tell you that I'll read them front to back, like I'll actually finish them and or apply them for like 3 months. Like I'll get really, really into something. Otherwise, what's the point in doing it? You know, instead of reading, you know, instead of being introduced to 20 new ideas and implementing 5% of 20. You know, I'll implement 100% of 10, you know, or even 100% of 3 sometimes in a year because it just keeps working. So that's me. You know, I do very little like variety, but I do it very deep. But that's my personality. So that doesn't suit everyone as well.
But that's where the results come. All the results in life come from compounding long-term results over time. You know, I wrote down process and focus. I remember early in my business career, I joined a coaching group, and the guy who was leading it was a big fan of Think and Grow Rich. And he's like, the book to read now is Think and Grow Rich. Come back. Okay, I read it. Now what? Read it again. Yeah, but I just read it. What's the next thing? No, but did you implement it? No, then read it again. You know, it's that whole, like, it's that inch wide, mile deep. It's that one of my favorite. I got two favorite quotes about mastery. One is, do it until it becomes dull, and then keep going until it becomes beautiful. And the other one is, perseverance is all the hard work you do when you're already sick and tired from all the hard work you finish doing. And I love
Yeah.
that kind of concept, that's where it all comes from, that specialization, that knowledge, that, you know. Greg
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Glassman. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. You're right. But also, you know, I don't want people listening to hear that and think that they have to do that because it doesn't always work like that. You know, like some people, for example, if you look at ultra successful people, some people have made, you know, 99% of their money doing one thing. like Jeff Bezos and Amazon all in one thing, right? But then you also have people who are just as rich, like Bernard Arnault, who owns LVMH through M&A. So he made, you know, almost the same money of Jeff Bezos, but in a completely different, playing a completely different sport. You know, Jeff Bezos is like playing golf, right? Just one thing, bang, hit the ball, right? And then Bernard Arnault is like a triathlon athlete. You know, like he's had to master, you know, hotels and food and this and that. And so obviously variety, you know, sparks his engine, right? Like variety gives him a bit of a kick. Mm. And variety gives me a kick, but I just do a very small thing within a piece of variety, right? So some people, you know, thrive in chaos, but some people thrive in order. So, you know, you have to really... And I think a lot of people can get stuck like, oh, you know, I saw that article about that guy and he was 27 and he's a $1 billion company. I should be like him. Like, no. Well, that worked for him in a very, very specific way. It's like, okay, well, how can you... It's more about how can you find your sport? You know, how can you sample what you need to sample to find your sport? You know, like, are you a golf player? Like, are you a solo man, woman type of business person that just can master one thing? Very few people can do that, you know, like, and just have the guts in them to go all the way in that. And then you got someone who might be a bit more versatile, right? And they're more of a triathlete type of thing. And you know, because they focus on three things, it makes them better at all three things. But if they just focus on one, they start to get dull and bored. And then, you know, so it's the chaos that makes them better at all three things, right?
I could see it both ways. And what I mean by that is I fully respect that there's billions of people on this planet. And so if you're one in a million, there's whatever, there's like a million people like you out there, right? So there's a ton of variety for all shapes. And so there's a lot of different ways to achieve it. I think for those people though, the ones that even the variety versus, it's the same thing about mastering a simple set of fundamentals that are just applied differently, where for one person, it looks like variety, but for another one, because to bring in a jiu-jitsu example I use from time to time, I got respect for the guy. He's not necessarily my fan favorite, but Roger Gracie is one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters. But he's the least flashy and the least exciting to some people because everybody knows what he's going to do. When he comes, he's going to judo throw you. He's going to get top mount and he's going to gi choke you. And it's just, he just wins world championship after world championship, judo throw, mount, gi choke, but he's doing it to the best people. And so he just does the fundamentals so well. So I think even in the example where you have someone that gets to that success level, I think for them, it's a core set of fundamentals that maybe are transferable somehow. And I think that speaks to what you're saying. You have to figure out your ikigai. You have to figure out what really makes you sing and what you're good at. And just get really good at that. Where for you, it's play, but for other people, it looks like work. For you, it's fun. Other people, it looks like chaos. And I think you just got to double down on that and find partners perhaps that support you. And, you know, and just make sure you got your roof and ramen covered. And some of that maybe just comes from something we haven't talked about where there has to be a planning element, a hope for, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst type thing. Like I think most businesses need to have, if they don't, at least 6 to 12 months of runway. And that's not even something on a lot of business owners' radar. Like you ask the business owners, what's a runway? They're like, what's a runway? And I'm like, cash reserve. Like if things don't go well, how long can you keep the lights on? 1 month, you know, like. I think that's something that there's so many people. It's like they say the average person is something like $2-3 million go through their fingertips, but they just don't manage it well. And I think that that's something that maybe is worth mentioning too. If people are in this game of entrepreneurship, you know, to really try to maintain a healthy gap between what you're making and what you spend and to save or reinvest it
Bitcoin
as best as you can, you know, for those rainy days type thing. And then, like you said, just to find what works for you best. I think that's a really powerful lesson to figure out. And what I loved about what you said is that you didn't talk about, well, once a week I do this. It sounds like for you, that's every day. You're not a lion on one day and then another day you're not. Because when I was a kid, I watched this movie called Groundhog Day. And in it, the movie is about this guy. He's kind of a charlatan. He's not really that good of a character. And he one day wakes up and he's reliving the day he just had. And it's movie, he's stuck in this time loop and he just can't get out of reliving the same day. that he's had. It's been redone by a few different people, but in Groundhog Day, what ends up happening is at some point he submits to his fate. And if he's got to live the same day, he just decides to make it the best day ever. And one day he actually ends up waking up to the next day, but it's he'd improved his character. So I just thought, what would be the 24-hour day I would have to live that I could live 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 80 years of my life, and love what I've done and who I've become and how I've spent my life and what I've achieved as a result of that routine. So I really like what you say, because it's sustainable, it's high impact, and it seems to be working for you. So now, what are some of the trends that you're paying attention to 5-10 years down the line? We're having a lot happen geopolitically. There's a lot of technological disruptions. There's a lot happening economically. What are some of the things that you're paying attention to?
In what context? You mean in terms of business or life, or in terms of what?
Well, I think both. Like, how are you preparing for the future and your business for the future?
Yeah. So there's a quote that I love, which is, yeah, if someone offered you $10 million today, you'd take it, right? Maybe. But then what if someone said to you, hey, look, I'll give you $10 million today, but then you die tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. So that teaches you that time and your health and, you know, the quality and the quantity of the days that you have, you know, on this planet is really what counts. Right. So I keep saying to my wife and my daughter, like, you know, no sugar in the house. Like, we don't eat that crap, because, you know, we all know that it kills us, but some people just do it anyway. Like, like, no sugar in the house. You know, let's all gently ease into biohacking. I'm not saying we've got to do anything crazy, like walk around with, you know, UV masks on our faces, you know, out in the street. But I mean, let's dial the attention up on, you know, air quality in the house, and obviously, like, no smoking. And if our friends smoke, tell them to go outside. And you know, no vaping, right? And no secondhand vaping. You know, air quality in the house. Where we buy our fruit and vegetables from, you know, don't buy the cheapest ones just because they're cheap. You know, try to buy, you know, organic, and you know, what's the harm in paying a little bit more if you feel better? And usually, it helps you to lose weight anyway, because there's less salts and stuff and preservatives. So we're going to look better. Our skin's going to be better. So all the things that people care about, like not being fat and that type of thing, all the physical superficial things happen anyway, right? Yep. So it's like a win-win, you know. But yeah, you pay a bit more money, you invest on the front end. But as we all know, all investments matter. Like, who has the last laugh, right? And it's Warren Buffett that was sitting, you know, behind a desk reading a newspaper every day, not buying jets and fucking jacuzzis and all that type of thing, just sitting there, and who's got, you know, $325 billion in the bank account? Warren Buffett. So who has the last laugh? You know, people that invest a little bit every day, they have the last laugh. So I really work hard to keep my eye on, you know, what are like what's the little piggy bank that I'm putting $2 in today, right? You know, is it my health? Is it doing podcasts like this? You know, I think podcasts are enormously underrated. If you want to ask me about a future business strategy, I think that, you know, in the 1970s and 80s, you had to be, you know, a good looking, like, model movie star to get some, you know, fame and attention. Now you just got to be a dude or a girl that has something interesting to say. It might not even be your idea, and just record it on a couch on a podcast, and then all of a sudden you got the same exposure as a movie star, right? Back then, that had to jump through all those hoops. So, you know, long form podcasts, you know, Trump jumped on the Joe Rogan podcast, 50 million views in 3 days, and he only beat Kamala by like 4 million votes, right? So, like, isn't that just black and white? You can see the power of this thing that we're doing right now.
I love podcast. I think it's so high leverage.
Yeah.
Because I still get downloads from podcasts I did in 2016.
Yeah.
And even if I just think about it from a legacy point of view, if I die, my kids have hours and hours of a library that they can listen to and know how I felt about things and my philosophy on stuff. And, you know, some people are afraid of the accountability, but just don't be a jerk. I think it's okay to change your opinions and your views. You know, no, I agree on that. I think that's really powerful. Can we talk a little bit? I know I want to be respectful of your time. Let's talk about the Score app in the sense of why Score app? And I bring this up. I kind of have some insight. There was a book, I think it was called Psychology and Advertising, and it was copyright date was 1912 or 1916.
Yeah, I think I know that book.
And it was the questionnaire method. And this has been rebranded so many times in over 100 years now. You seem to be in that business. You seem to be doing pretty well with it. I don't really have a specific question other than why surveys? Why score? Why?
Yeah. Well, let me share a bit, right? So this, if you're watching live, it's a book I'm holding. It's called Scorecard Marketing. I can share a link if people would like a PDF or physical copy, if you know, if we can get one out to you.
Yep.
And in essence, Scorecard Marketing is a lead generation tool. It's a lead generation tool that's used right now by, you know, close to 7,000 people around the world in more than 100 countries, like just crazy numbers. And, you know, we're just doubling down on what works, you know. So we've used this in our businesses in the past for many years for millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, it helps any coach, consultant, author, service provider, online entrepreneur, podcaster, you know, generate highly qualified leads because people love filling out questionnaires and learning about themselves. So that's a precipice, right? So what does that look like in numbers? A typical lead generation magnet, like here's my ebook or here's a 10% discount code. And, you know, for that, you know, I'm gonna ask you for your email. Plus you get this, you give me your email, I'll give you 10% off for a free ebook. That usually converts at like say 5, 10, you know, maybe up to 15%. But quizzes and questionnaires and scorecards typically convert at about 20 to 40%, right? Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, your buyers are going to double and triple. It means that you get more, yes, but you also get more data on who just isn't ready to buy right now. You know, because so we've all been on that situation where we're in it, we're pitching something, like we're trying to sell something or offering something to someone, and their eyes just glaze over. They're like, oh, I'm not interested. And you're like, oh, shit, well, you know, I've come this far, so I've got to finish the pitch now to someone that I know is not interested, right?
Right.
So this helps you to avoid that because you get to see, they tell you if they're interested, you know, within the scorecard before you even have to go and try to sell them anything, right? And this could be physical products. It could be e-commerce. You know, your pitching might be done through email, might not be done through a face-to-face conversation, but any type of pitching, right? So it's really, really powerful because it gives you data on your clients. And as we all know, you know, having a personalized experience helps you to win more with new potential clients. Perfect example, you know, Daryl, when you sign on to Amazon.com and when I sign on to Amazon.com, we both see completely different pages because you've got your account, I've got my account, and that didn't happen by accident, right? That's Amazon using scorecard marketing to personalize how to sell more stuff to you and how to sell more stuff to me. So we help small businesses do that.
I love that. And so, you know, there's a place, free plug. I think it's Dr. Kong. It's a footwear shop in a mall across the street from my house. I've taken photos of what they do, and I've used that as a great example because I think it's so brilliant. They have a free foot health assessment, and you go in, and they've got this little thing that you stand on, and all it is, they've got a piece of paper. They put it on. It's basically a piece of paper on an ink pad. And you step on it with your left foot, and then you step on it with your right foot, and they flip it over, and there's your footprint in ink. And then next to it is basically a legend. This is a healthy footprint. This is a footprint with this kind of problem. This is a footprint with that kind of problem. And then it's got their products beside that help each thing. And in medicine, they say prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. I'm going to say that again for those that missed the last 4 years we had with COVID. Prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. You go to jail. And so the same thing in business. You know, I think that's part of one of the really power. People always want to know, will this work for me? Is this a fit for my situation? You know, and I think it's just really at the heart of what sales is in general. It's not about selling ice to Eskimos and some ninja one flip, one trick, you know, close hack word. I think it's really more about matchmaking and helping people better understand the situation that they're in and their options that they have. And so for me, I think that's why I said it was an interesting, that wasn't a lie. This isn't just a plug for people to ask, but I'm really interested in the Score app because I just love everything to do with that, because I think it's permission-based, highly ethical marketing that really gets to the heart of things and gives businesses incredibly valuable feedback on what's working, what's not, and who's actually, like, whose attention are they getting? And I, you know, I mean, because I'm a business coach marketing consultant, I kind of in some ways can do your own pitch about this for you, but I have some people that, you know, but what if I can't get 100 answers? Well, then you know what your problem is. Like, if you've got a quiz and you can't get 100 people to fill out your quiz, how do you expect to launch a profitable business where you need consistent, you know, like that addresses it right then and there. Can you maybe speak to that? Like, what, obviously in your business, what are the 3 to 5 biggest mistakes you see people making?
Yeah, good question. So the first mistake is people would often just give up too soon, right? Because they're not, like, their brain is very strong in certain parts, but not very strong in, like, the marketing part, where it's all about empathy and communicating to the person in front of them and getting inside of their head and talking to them the way that they want to be spoken to. So thankfully, you know, Uncle ChatGPT can help us out with that. So we've got Uncle ChatGPT plugged into the software under the AI wizard, where you answer a few questions. So you'll do a scorecard and then it'll write a marketing campaign for you. That would typically take about a day and a half, but you've got 6 or 7 hours of copywriting and stuff. And you don't have to use this, but it's, you know, who didn't want to do an assignment back in school where someone wrote your first draft for you? And all you had to do is go in there and start, you know, polishing things up. So it's just like that. Someone's done first draft of your assignment for you and you just got to go and then polish it up. So that was easily the biggest roadblock to stop people from winning. But now people will use that and they're winning, and you know, ChatGPT is just getting smarter as well. Like, the results that we've seen it right now compared to a year ago is a lot better as well. So it's just like, there's no excuse. Like, there's literally no excuse anymore. You know, there's quotes. I love brutal, you know, cold, hard facts and insights, right? You know, you either can have your excuses or results, but you can't have both, right? So you just got to jump in and get in there and use all the tools available. If you need help, ask for help. You know, we have team members all in English speaking countries. English is their first language. You know, we've also got some in Latin America where Spanish is their first language if you need help in Spanish, right? So it's just about ripping off that Band-Aid and giving it a go.
So is that the main mistake, is they just give up too soon?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like the amount of people that give up compared to the amount of people that go all the way and don't win is completely different.
So what's the recipe for success then with scorecard marketing?
Yeah, so the recipe for success is you get your scorecard up, use the AI wizard, you get set up, you put it out there, share it with people. Then all of a sudden something really scary is going to happen, and that's a whole bunch of leads are going to come in. And then now you got to actually do something with it. You know, you got to either email them, you got to text them, you got to call them. But, you know, the next biggest problem is people get 10, 20 leads, and guess what?
They don't follow up.
They don't follow up for like 3 weeks, and then they try call them 3 weeks later and say, hey, remember when you did this? And then they get a rejection because I don't remember what I was doing 3 weeks ago. You know, you don't remember what you were doing 3 weeks ago. Like, so you have to jump on them within 48 hours. Like if not even less, right? Like, I don't remember any phone calls or any products I was looking at, you know, a week ago. So it's, yeah, there is, you know, to get traction, you have to have both hands on the steering wheel. You know, you got to be fully engaged driving this thing where you want it to go. You can't just, you know, sit and expect, you know, everything will happen for you.
Not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear that money was just going to fly out of my computer when I hit this whiz bang gizmo, click two buttons, and now I'm rich on a beach. No?
Yeah, so you can get there, right? Like, one of my businesses back probably like two businesses ago used scorecard marketing, and we got up to about 250K a month in the first 2 years. And you know, I got to a point where I could take like a 4 week holiday and that would still happen. But that was just taking into action everything that I'm saying, you know, which not everyone will do.
Right.
So it's all about getting the first win, the next win, bigger wins, and copying and pasting those steps.
And is it generally one scorecard, like one quiz? Is that a company's typically one quiz away from the next big breakthrough? Is one quiz carry a whole company, or is it that you have to constantly reinvent and refine? I'm just curious your experience.
Yeah, so we just used one. So we managed to have just one, but that was, you know, version 13 of one, right? So you could see it as the 13th scorecard. But each one should represent like a different campaign. You know, for example, a lot of people right now would have like their Black Friday special scorecard that's out there in the market, right? Then you got the Christmas special, you might have the Valentine's Day special, like those, you know, big events type of thing, you know, the April Fool's scorecard marketing campaign. It's, you know, if you think about it, does Apple market every iPhone the same? No. Is every iPhone the same? Pretty much, right? So every iPhone has a slightly different refreshed, you know, tweak and shine and color scheme because they're refreshing the marketing campaign. So if, you know, the third most successful company in the world constantly does that, it's been doing that for almost 50 years now, then why shouldn't we as a small business? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I like the idea of, having an annual marketing calendar that you follow, and at the end of the year, or maybe even each quarter, reviewing what worked, what didn't, putting what worked away to try again next year, and then throwing out the 60-70% that was garbage, until hopefully what you end up with is this portfolio of really high quality. Some businesses will do a 2-for-1 special or something like that. They're like, sales are great, now what do we do? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You do the two, you do that again, you just schedule that again for later. I mean, you try something if you need to give it a rest. But, so I think that's great.
Yeah.
Maxwell, this has been a great interview. You've had such good insights and info. I've got pages notes. People may want to listen to this more than once. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
No. You know, I just, well, we have a Black Friday special right now. So I don't know how soon people will listen to this, but jump on the website, take a look, and you'll see everything I've mentioned in action.
And that's scoreapp.com. Is that where you're saying they should go?
Yeah, that's correct. Scoreapp.com.
SCOREAPP.com. Go check out scoreapp.com. Got all these templates. Now, are these just templates that you guys just kind of thought about and thought maybe they might work, and you just put them up there for giggles?
Yeah, well, we've been around for almost 5 years now, so we've built them over a pretty, you know, significant amount of time.
Right. So you're
Yeah.
saying that these are pre-vetted templates that a company could plug and play and put in and test out and know whether it's going to work for them or not pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Copy and paste. You know, we've reinvented the wheel a few times, so you don't need to do that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So whether you catch the Black Friday sale or not, go check out scoreapp.com, SCOREAPP.com. And Maxwell, if people have questions, comments, concerns, if they want to reach out to you personally, what's some of the best ways for them to get in touch?
Yeah, so the best way to get hold of me is on LinkedIn. I'm addicted to LinkedIn. I get a lot of people message me from podcasts on LinkedIn. And, you know, just drop in, make sure you drop a note so I know what we're talking about, and we can go from there.
Yeah, perfect. So if you want to find them, go look up Maxwell Nee, MaxwellNeeE. Maxwell, thank you so much for coming and joining us today, knowing you got your own following, your own audience, your own family, your own people to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do a little bit better.
Yeah, perfect. My pleasure. Talk soon. Thanks.